Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
And thank you all so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, in studio, bags packed, about to leave, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. I am ready to get away. But before I get out of here, I got to talk to you wonderful people. I'm ready to do this show today, man. It's getting warm. It's middle of summer. I'm excited.
You can smell the salt.
I can almost smell it. And I still got a little bit of work to do before I get out of here, but I am almost done. And I want to say this is probably the easiest time I've had before a journey. Normally, there always something goes wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My luck's
kind of notorious.
My luck is starting to change. It's I think it's good.
It's nice.
And then hopefully nothing having me knock on some wood over here. But yeah, man, I think we're ready to go and get out of here.
Nice. Watching
the College World Series.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Game one was very impressive. I was really impressed by the way the Aggies played ball.
Gig 'em.
I know that, what is it, the best out of three. It's different than the actual World Series.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool, man. I'd like to go to one of those.
That would be
up there in Omaha.
Good time. Oh, yeah. Would be a good time. You know what? It's hotter up there than I realized. I'm watching all of them. So I'm like, man, I thought it'd be a little bit cooler up there.
Well, it's El Nino. That's I saw right. Where it was hotter in Maine than it was here in Texas the other day.
Well, you know what? I'm sorry for y'all, but I'm okay with it down here.
Yeah, and I want to say to all those people that are living on the Texas coast and Louisiana and stuff, down by Galveston and all that, man, you guys are getting hit with the hurricane waters, right?
That's bad.
A lot of flooding and stuff.
So
I wonder what it's like there by the seawall. You know what I mean? Like right there in Galveston?
Rough.
Yeah. So our hearts go out to everybody who's suffering down there.
So bad.
I bet flood insurance is off the chain expensive.
Oh, goodness.
You know what I mean?
100%.
I don't even know how that would work. But I mean, obviously, everybody down there has it.
Well, here's how it works. You don't want your stuff to get wet.
Yeah.
that's basically the way it works.
I saw a product years ago. Remember, where it was like Hurricane Katrina or Andrew. I don't remember which one it was. But they were selling like these big inflatable bags that you could put your sofa in and stuff like that.
Really?
So if a hurricane came, like your sofa, I guess, would float theoretically on the water and then you could wait for the water to go down and then like just pull
it
out.
Just be in your house, but it wouldn't be ruined.
I think it was a scam though. Like, I don't see how that would actually work.
I know. Well,
how would it not get punctured? The bag.
The bag's tough.
But I don't know. Maybe it's a real thing. What have you been up to?
I have been up to just partying with my granddaughter.
Nice.
That's it. Just, you know, of course, I didn't get in the pool, but just like hanging out and singing and all the family and everything going crazy. It was just a all around great time.
Speaking of pool, have you got yours built up?
No. Yet? No. Are you kidding? It's still in the box. It's hot. I got to get out there and do some work. And I probably didn't make the best choice, but I'm not letting my daughter and my wife off the hook. They're going to have to help too.
There you go.
And I'm going to wait till it gets real hot and I'm going to bring them out there.
You got to have them some, they have to have some investment, right?
That's
a little
right.
bit. You got to have a little skin in the game.
A little skin in the game.
Make you appreciate it just a little bit more. Cause if you just do it all, they'll be like, oh man, this isn't even that good.
Dad does it. Everything's great. It's okay. Yeah. No, I want them invested in it. Yeah.
Well,
100%.
Let's get into some news.
What have you got?
Check this out. A possible upright cryptid canine.
Oh, again, here we go. Who doesn't love Dog Man?
Right?
Still, after all this time, the idea of a giant werewolf is hard for me to wrap my head around.
Right?
But I love the stories and the terrifying part of it.
Well, you're going to like this then. Yeah. It says, I was referred to you for an explanation. I don't know what I saw. It could have been a bear. Though, to my knowledge, they don't live in eastern South Dakota. Anyway, here's what happened. So one night, there was a blood moon. I decided to try and get some decent pictures and went to a secluded spot just outside of town. Pulling into the area, I noticed a youngish tree, 3 or 4 inches in diameter, had fallen by a nearby creek, right by where you could park your car to shore fish, you know, I guess right next to it so you could fish in the creek. I started setting up the scope and camera, and I heard a lot of rustling in the brush. Since coyotes are common enough, I had my handgun on my hip, so I didn't pay it much mind. But the rustling soon became more akin to something violently crashing through the woods. Now, at this point, I stopped what I was doing and shined my flashlight around to try and see what it was. I couldn't see anything, but was concerned by the sounds, so I started to pack my stuff up to leave when I heard some splashing, followed by the sound of a very large crack. I turned and, yes, drew my gun while pointing my light at the fallen tree, and there it stood. There was a huge adrenaline dump. Everything went in slow motion. This 6-foot-tall thing with what seemed to me at the time the face of a wolf, but much too large to be a wolf or a coyote. It was roughly as tall as I am, and I'm 6 foot. And as the light hit it, it paused what it was doing. It looked at me, growled, and then charged at me. I fired 8 shots in quick succession before it barreled into me, knocking me flat. But rather than a follow-through on the attack, it just kept running and disappeared into a nearby cornfield. I got up and I left all my stuff. I came back the next day to find the farmer, a couple of sheriffs, and a game warden. The farmer had sheep, and a couple had been killed the night before. So he had been driving around setting up trail cams and stumbled upon my stuff. The weird trail of smashed corn as well as some strange prints were found in the mud. He had called the game warden, and apparently the sheriffs were bored and came to check things out too. I told them about what I saw and was told it was probably a bear, but the tracks were distinctly not bear tracks. I don't believe it. What do I do? William. Wow.
Well, yikes.
I've never heard of one crashing into somebody.
No.
That's why it always makes me think that it may not actually be a physical thing, right? But it's rooting around in the brush and making noise and physically knocked him down. Thank God it didn't kill him.
Handgun blazing.
I get the pistol thing, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Starts, you have a 6-foot-tall wolf, bear, whatever. And it's that close to you, yeah, start letting loose rounds.
It's time to start shooting at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, that's terrifying.
I think next time you go out to photograph the blood moon, you know, maybe you take something a little bit more powerful with more rounds.
Like take get some you, people
get you,
with you.
Get you an AR, right? Get you a 300 blackout.
Take you like 4 or 5 friends. You're going to have to like set up.
Get you an FN,
to
FAL.
Defend yourself.
Get you an AK-47. Something.
Or don't even worry about that. Here's what you do. Just get dog treats.
There you go.
That's all you need.
Some pepperoni.
Begging strips. Anything like that. Bro, you're covered. You're covered.
Maybe it was extra like ill-tempered that night because it was the blood moon. Like maybe that drives them even more crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they go into a rage. Like they're not mad enough already. The chihuahua in them comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Look, I got something again. Headline for you. Headline grab for you, Mr. Filson. Glowing white crawler humanoid and horned being has been reported.
Okay.
Get a
Tell
load
me
of
more.
This. So one of Lon's listeners at Phantoms and Monsters Radio sent this in about this crawler. Says, talking about the video that he just dropped when we had covered it not long ago, talking and saying that about this crawler humanoid video couldn't have come at a better time. As I've been increasingly interested in the topic lately because of a possible sighting of one about a year ago. Says, I was driving in the middle of nowhere in the country when I saw this very tall, extremely emaciated, said the limbs were seemingly only inches thick, naked white man to the point of the white that it was glowing.
Okay.
It turned away from the headlights just as we came upon it on the side of the road and proceeded to walk through a field towards a wetland refuge, which is further towards literally nowhere. So there was no reason for anyone to be there, and the nearest house is roughly a mile away. Says when we viewed the car camera, we couldn't see it as it was just out of view, but we found this goat-horned thing peeking out from some bushes.
A satyr?
Yeah, it sounds like. It had been a fairly tall as well, and it was sitting in a ditch, poking out of some tall, thick weeds. We went by the day after, looking for some kind of evidence, found nothing of the man, no footprints, not a thing. The ground was extremely thick mud, and my sons and I couldn't find one single print on our, and says, and our feet were sinking as we walked. Now, what did we find, or we did find what looked like large-sized hoof prints by the ditch as if something had walked out of it and down into the field, and this steps appeared to be bipedal. Says the whole sighting was just all kinds of creepy as this man was not only naked, but also so very thin. It was almost like a scene from a horror movie. All kinds of strange things have been sighted in this area, from a UFO that came down above a power line, leeching electricity with some cables back in the 80s, to a black-eyed kid account told by my son's best friend. I've recently only attached the pale crawlers as a possibility to what it could have been, so I've been listening and reading all kinds of accounts lately. Thank you for furthering my research. A.
Wow.
So, they may have been hanging out. Look, sounds to me like you busted up a drug deal between a pale crawler, maybe, and a satyr. Maybe the satyr had some fey dust for the pale crawler, and he's like, hey, oh, there's a car, go! And then they just scattered.
I think the satyr is like a lookout for the drug deal going down. Like, maybe, I'll blend what? In because I look like a goat, right? Nobody's going to suspect anything.
And if something comes up, I'll blow my pan flute.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break, folks. When we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some phantom planes. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Quick Google search of your name and you might be shocked what comes up. I did, and all kinds of crazy things popped up. Oftentimes, the things you find about yourself on the internet isn't even accurate. Now, I get calls all the time from people asking me if I have any hot deals on some homes that they would like to buy, and I have to tell them that I'm not a real estate agent. And they will tell me, well, that's not what it says on some website. Sure enough, there's wrong information out there. It makes me feel uncomfortable knowing that my name is on the internet with wrong data. Who knows what else might be out there that is simply wrong. Now, data brokers sell your information to scammers, spammers, and anyone else who may want to target you. Earlier this year, a report revealed that data brokers sell Americans' mental health information with minimal oversight. These brokers gather and sell personal data using automated processes to collect publicly available information. By merging various data sources, they make statistical inferences about individuals, such as income level, your age, financial records, even marriage certificates. Most consumers are unaware of this extensive data collection, as it is often hidden in privacy notices, and no one is reading that. Your full legal name, your home address, health records, arrest reports, your relatives, it's all out there. And we are sick of it, and that's why we've been using Aura, the sponsor of today's show. Aura shows me which data brokers are selling my information and automatically submits opt-out requests for me. Aura found dozens of data brokers that were selling my information. Cleaning up my information not only helps reduce the amount of spam I get, but it protects me from hackers who could use this information to help them access my social media accounts, my bank accounts, or other sensitive information. Aura also does much more to protect me and my family from online threats that I can't see. I get other features like antivirus, VPN, password management, parental controls, identity theft insurance, and more without having to download several different apps. It's really easy to set up, and best of all, I get everything at one affordable price. You may already have one or two of these tools that you're currently using, but not having Aura is like locking the front door and leaving the back door wide open. Aura is always on, doing all the hard work of keeping me safe so I can focus on other tasks with peace of mind. We value our privacy. We also value yours. Stop data brokers from exposing your personal information. Go to our sponsor, Aura.com/expanded. That's Aura.com/expanded to get a 14-day free trial and see how much of yours is being sold. That's Aura.com/expanded. Don't wait. Do it today. Here at Expanded Perspectives, we've covered a lot of strange aerial phenomenon, from strange orbs to unusual triangular flying craft. We've discussed many bizarre things when it comes to aviation, like black helicopters, the disappearance of Flight 19, Frederick Valentich, Amelia Earhart, even all the way back to the mysterious dirigibles belonging to the Sonora Aero Club. But there is another very strange aerial phenomenon that has carved out its own niche within the world of the weird. This is the realm of the ghostly aircraft, or phantom planes. Much like the phantom trains we've talked about on previous episodes, phantom planes seen and heard, but which suddenly vanish without a trace. These are not UFOs, in the sense that they are reported as alien ships or something unrecognizable and unexplainable, but rather, they are described as clearly being airplanes of human design, often vintage models, but not always. To go one step even further, there is even a subgroup that belongs to phantom planes, and these are what is known as phantom plane crashes. That's right, folks. Much like phantom planes, these strange illusions go one step further. Not only are the planes seen, but they are seen going down. They are heard. Sometimes even the ground reverberates with a violent force of the impact. Often, reports mention raging flames, smoke, or even people parachuting to safety. The smell of smoke, burning oil, the smell of burning fuel, rubber, or many other sensations are strangely detected. However, when the supposed crash site is investigated, nothing at all is there. No wreckage, no crash, no mayhem, absolutely nothing. Usually, in these cases, no plane or person is reported missing in the area, and certainly no distress call or crash. Air traffic control will report nothing unusual. Yet the witnesses remain adamant that a plane has indeed crashed. So, where did the plane go? How could it crash and then just vanish off the face of the earth as if it were never there? This is the weird, spooky world of phantom plane crashes. Now, apparently, these strange crashes have been going on for almost as long as aviation itself. One of the first reported cases took place back on September 15, 1932. The crew of the Sussex-based ship, the St. Nicholas Lightship, was in the North Sea when they saw something strange indeed. According to the captain of the vessel, a plane had dramatically dropped from the sky, but rather than crash into the water with a sensational splash, as expected, it instead floated upon the surface with its engines running. As the baffled crew looked on, the aircraft then suddenly allegedly exploded into a ball of flame, which was followed by two bright white lights appearing in the sky above it. The area was immediately searched,
but no sign of the plane could be found. No floating debris, not even an oil patch, which is very strange considering the major explosion that they had just seen moments before. And, once again, there were no unaccounted for airplanes in the area. It is not clear what the white lights that were witnessed could have been. Burning debris, ghostly phenomena, UFOs. It's not real clear. Was it even connected to the crash at all? I think so. In another strange case, this time taking place on October 31st, 1935, near the small coastal town of Newcastle, County Down, in Northern Ireland, the first witnesses were a father known as A. Moore and his daughter, who were sitting and relaxing outside at their home at around noon when they spotted a small plane shuddering and sharply dipping as if it were in trouble before abruptly nosediving into the sea. The plane was apparently completely, eerily silent the entire time. Authorities were contacted, and boats from the Newcastle Coast Guard station were scrambled and sent out, who were subsequently joined by two Scottish fishing boats in the area. But they failed to find any debris out in the impending bad weather on the gray, choppy water, even after a thorough search. Other eyewitness reports of the same crash started coming in as well, yielding more details, such as that the plane had been trailing plumes of smoke and flames, yet oddly no one at the nearby St. John's Lighthouse or Killow Coast Guard Station had seen or heard anything, despite the fact that the supposed burning, faltering plane would have passed right by them. Likewise, many residents of the area were questioned by authorities, but also reporting having not seen or heard anything. A more intensive search was carried out the next day when the weather had cleared up, but again, no trace of any such aircraft was ever found. In another phantom plane crash that took place in 1997, a woman named Doreen Ashwall was on a happy day excursion to Derbyshire along with her husband, her daughter-in-law, and her son-in-law when they were startled by an enormous, vintage-looking plane flying frighteningly low directly towards them. But for some reason, the plane produced no noise whatsoever. So low was the lumbering giant of a plane, and on such an apparent collision course with them, that the husband reportedly nearly drove the car off the side of the road in a panic. Now, Ashall would later go on to record and say, "It was so vivid. It was just like being on a runway. You were just like planted on a runway and a plane was coming straight for you, and you were in the way. That's what it looked like." Now, the plane apparently went right over them, so close that they instinctively ducked, yet the whole time it was completely silent and just flew over them and then disappeared from sight. It seemed from its flight trajectory and its extremely low altitude that it was definitely going to crash. So, the police were contacted. However, authorities would find that not only was there no crash, but there had been no record of any aircraft that size being in the vicinity at all. Now, this is not the only time someone has reported seeing spectral aircraft that are completely silent. In another account from April of 1995, a man in Derbyshire, a county in the East Midlands of England, by the name of Tony Ingle, allegedly witnessed an old World War II-era plane with robust propellers clearly spinning that made not a hint of sound, even though it should have been quite loud from how far away it was. Ingle alleged that he watched in bafflement as this weirdly silent plane rapidly descended as if it were on a crash course before disappearing behind a hedgerow. When Ingle went to investigate the horrific crash scene he expected to see, he was shocked to find a picturesque field with an undisturbed flock of sheep just grazing. There was no identification of any plane crash, and indeed, the plane was gone altogether. The sky was completely clear. In another case from Derbyshire, on March 24, 1997, local police received a deluge of hundreds of phone calls from people claiming to have seen a massive plane, which looked like a World War II-era bomber, flying alarmingly low near the Howden Reservoir in an area called the Peak District Hills, and seemingly about to inevitably crash. it was reported as making an odd, low humming noise, although not the roar that one would expect from such a large propeller-driven airplane. The plane was seen by several witnesses, including farmers, two plumbers, a nurse, a newspaper reporter, and even a police officer. Police Special Constable named Marie-France Tattersfield went on to say, "It was the weirdest thing I have ever seen. It was big, and it was well below the legal altitude for night flying. All its windows were lit up, which made it look even more odd to me because no pilot would fly blind at that time of night in and around these hills." Now, the mystery plane disappeared from view and was so incredibly low and on such a seemingly inevitable groundward trajectory towards the bleak moor below that a crash seemed certain, and the authorities once again were notified. A full search, utilizing tracker dogs, other aircraft, and hundreds of personnel and volunteers, could not find any sign of a crash, and the case remains a mystery till today. Now, some wilder theories have cropped up in later years that what they were seeing was actually a UFO crashing, but everyone who saw it insisted clearly that it was an old World War II era bomber, not something from outer space. In yet another case, on the evening of October 20th, 2011, around 8:30 p.m. in the county of Berkshire, which is located in southeast England, west of London, several residents of the area of the quiet suburbs of Reading, Tilehurst, and Calcot were purportedly jarred by a deafening roar coming from the skies above, which was reported as sounding almost like an air raid alarm, after which it was noticed that the air stank of oil. Now, some of the witnesses also claimed to have seen what looked like a passenger plane with a red light on it that was obviously in distress go soaring across the sky, apparently seeming to go down in the vicinity of the nearby Sullom Woods. Almost all of the witnesses remarked on how odd the noise it made had been, stating that it had not been like any aircraft that they had ever heard of before. Despite the large number of reports that came flooding in of people who had witnessed this, the Civil Aviation Authority had no indication on record of any aircraft having any difficulties in the area or flying as low as what was described. At the time, there was much more speculation by witnesses that the plane had been possibly an experimental aircraft of some sort, but no one knew for sure. There were also a lot of conspiracy theories that authorities were trying to cover up the whole incident. The case has never been solved. So, you're probably asking yourself right now, do all of these phantom plane crashes take place only in the UK? Well, they don't, as it turns out. There are reports all over the world. One such report allegedly occurred on April 25, 1942, in Providence, Rhode Island. On this day, police were suddenly inundated with calls from panicked residents claiming that they had seen what looked like a military bomber of some kind spectacularly crash in flames near the town, which had left a column of smoke snaking up into the air, although the exact location of the crash could not be ascertained. Military officials were notified, and an extensive search was immediately launched by concerned authorities, with the news of the supposed crash making headlines that were fueled by an army spokesperson's claim that he believed it to be possibly an army bomber and that there would most likely have been five crew members aboard. However, intensive searches using aircraft were unable to find any wreckage or sign of a crash at all. Also, a thorough search found that there were no unaccounted for military aircraft in the area at the time. It remains to this day a mystery as to what people had seen that night crashing into the ground, and no trace of such a violent crash was ever found. This mysterious event would be followed a few days later by a similar phantom crash in Bellingham, Massachusetts, where a man reported seeing what appeared to be a twin-engine military aircraft flying low enough that its wing had clipped the top of the trees. Just like the unusual sightings in the United Kingdom, the witness claimed that this plane was completely and utterly silent the entire time. According to the man, the plane passed low over the trees and proceeded to apparently crash in the vicinity of nearby Silver Lake. other witnesses would soon come forward saying that they too had seen a twin-engine Army plane fly practically over their heads and that the plane seemed remarkably quiet before disappearing from view. Just like the incident in Rhode Island, a search was launched, which included aircraft, law enforcement personnel, the Army, firefighters, and dozens of volunteers fanning out through the woods near Silver Lake, but nothing was found, and the Army would find that again, none of its aircraft seemed to be missing. Oddly, in November of that very same year, there was a strange occurrence in which reports began coming in of a mysterious parachute, or multiple parachutes, coming down from the skies over Fall River, Massachusetts, which described 1 to 3 parachutes floating down near the reservoir there. An intensive search turned up no signs of the alleged parachutes or parachutist, and no trace of any aircraft going down, and both the Army and the Navy claimed that they had no unaccounted for airplanes. Additionally, there were no parachute drops of any kind scheduled at that time in the area. It is unknown what connection these strange phantom parachutists might have to do with the reported mystery plane crashes, but it's odd nevertheless. In another case, in 1956, another strange report came in from 3 women near Ovando, Montana, who said that they saw a descending plane with thick smoke billowing out of it. The objects that appeared to be parachutes, as well as a board-like object dropping from it. A search by local police turned up nothing. And 2 days later, another witness in the same general area came forward to report that he had seen a fiery explosion on a hillside not very far from his home, which had spewed red and yellow flames into the air. The time the witness gave for the event he had observed coincided quite well with what the women had seen, and it was feared that a plane had indeed gone down. However, the Air Force and the Civilian Aeronautics Administration insisted that no plane of any kind had crashed or had been reported missing. A more thorough search was instituted anyway, but nothing was found to suggest a plane crash, and the case remains a mystery. Then, back on the East Coast, on November 18, 1958, Dark Hollow, Pennsylvania, experienced a flap of sightings of a plane that seemed to be flying erratically, as if it was having technical difficulties. Numerous witnesses claimed to have either seen or heard the plane at the time, a civil defense coordinator of Cumberland County, Dale Murphy, stating that there had been 10 such reports successfully reported within a short span of time. In several of these reports, the plane was seen to be careening behind a hill, which was followed by a thunderous, bone-jarring boom, like a potent explosion. Strangely, the air traffic control agencies were notified, and they replied that there had been no sign of any plane going down or being in any kind of distress in the area at the time. Nevertheless, several rescue planes were scrambled and dispatched by the Air Force and the Civil Air Patrol, joined by hundreds of police, firemen, volunteers, and civil defense workers who scoured the ground below, but they could find not a single scrap of a crashed plane. At one point, during the search, it was reported that flares had been sighted arching up from the wilderness, which encouraged everyone involved, but still nothing could be found. Despite this lack of any progress, sightings of yellow flares continued to come in, with flares seen at approximately 1:30 a.m., 6 p.m., and 9:45 p.m. Yet extensive searches could not find the source of the flares, and it remained a baffling mystery. The search would ultimately be called off on the 22nd, with no sign of the supposedly crashed plane and no idea of who those mysterious flares had come from. Once again, like so many other cases, the whole incident remains a mystery. A few years later, within days of my birth, in Butler County, Ohio, on August 13, 1976, at around 11 p.m., an amateur radio operator reported to authorities that he had picked up a distress call from an aircraft apparently on its way from Oxford to Cincinnati. It could not be ascertained just what airplane the call could have come from, since air traffic control authorities had received no distress calls and there didn't seem to be any plane experiencing problems in the area. It seemed like just a head-scratching anomaly until several hours later, when at 1:45 a.m., a father named George Mosley, his son, and 2 other boys were out coon hunting near Riley Township, near Imhoff and Indian Creek Roads. When they got separated, when they again found each other, the boys claimed that they had seen a white flash in the sky at treetop level, after which they claimed to have heard screaming and then a loud crash. This claim was corroborated by another witness, who also reported that she had seen a small plane go down behind a hill at the same time, followed by a thunderous boom. The problem was that despite the distress call and the two separate sighting reports, airports in the area insisted that no plane had gone down. Once again, a search team was assembled, and after 3 days of looking, no crash was ever found. In yet another case, on January 15, 1997, at around 7:30 a.m., a number of residents of Westbrook, Connecticut, claimed they sighted a single-engine plane plummeting toward the waters of Long Island Sound. Strangely, one of the witnesses, a Daniel Bowes, said that the plane appeared to be in a nosedive towards the water, yet he didn't see the inevitable splash that it should have caused. No airport in the area reported any unaccounted-for planes, yet a rather large search was enacted involving the Coast Guard. Also, the State Department of Environmental Protection and firefighters and a few volunteers who used helicopters and boats to meticulously comb an area of 100 square miles around the estimated crash site. Yet there was absolutely no wreckage or a telltale sign of gasoline or oil in the water. No trace of a crashed plane in the area was ever found. In another strange account, on November 29, 1996, a resident of Miami Township, Ohio, claimed that he had been unloading groceries from his car at his home sometime between 7:30 and 8 p.m. when he heard a booming sound like two concrete slabs crashing together. The sound was literally earth-shaking, as the witness claims that it had such a potent force that it had vibrated the windows of his house and caused the ground to tremble for a full 30 seconds. Not long after that, he said that police from the Franklin Police Department had arrived in the area looking for what they suspected was a possible plane crash. This search apparently rapidly grew until it involved several police agencies from the Warren and Montgomery County areas coordinating their efforts. It would later be found that a second area resident had also heard a loud boom, like an explosion, out on near State Route 741, and yet another had claimed to have seen the actual downed plane, which reportedly had one red light. According to authorities, they had been contacted shortly before 9 p.m. by the FAA Flight Service Station located at the Dayton International Airport, which said that they had received an emergency locator transmission originating approximately 15 miles to the northwest of the Wright Brothers Airport. However, this beacon was unusual in that it had not been detected by local personnel, but rather by a satellite. Oddly, as the search continued, this ELT signal seemed to move and change locations until it ended up 2 miles west of Dayton General Airport. It was all highly unusual, and no one could explain why this should be. At 9:17 p.m., searchers picked up the unmistakable odor of burning rubber. Yet despite this, no wreckage or any scrap of debris whatsoever of a crashed plane was ever found. Just what the independent eyewitnesses from separate locations saw, as well as the strange roving ELT signal and the origin of the smell of hot burning rubber, they all remain complete mysteries. How can this be? How can so many people? How can they see these plane crashes, yet no trace of such a disaster, no sign of a missing plane, nor even any hint of a plane in the area at all, ever turns up? It baffles the mind. Are these crashes from a parallel dimension that for some reason bleed over into our plane of existence? Pardon the pun. Are these the results of some sort of time slip or hallucinations of some sort? If so, how does this explain the cases when separate witnesses in separate locations all report seeing the same thing? There is also the idea that these were experimental airplanes and their crashes were later covered up, but witnesses typically clearly describe seeing just a mundane, normal aircraft. In fact, most times it's an older, prop-driven airplane. One of the most bizarre cases ever is an incident that took place in Belgium in November of 1944. This was not just a phantom plane crash. This time, there was an actual physical plane found, but where it came from, no one knows. On November 23, 1944, a British Royal Air Force anti-aircraft unit stationed near Kortenberg, Belgium, was surprised by something that they saw lumbering towards them in the sky. There, barreling in their direction, was an American Army Air Corps B-17 bomber. The plane was coming in rather fast with its landing gear down, and because there was no such landing scheduled, and because of the speed of the incoming aircraft, it was assumed that it was preparing to make an emergency landing at their base. A communication with the base proved that indeed no such B-17 landing was expected, and the gunner crew braced themselves as the massive aircraft came hurtling in towards a nearby open plowed field. It was a rather messy landing to say the least, with the aircraft bouncing and swerving along as the terrified gunners looked on, finally stopping dangerously close to the position after one of its wings clipped the ground. Yet it was still in one piece and had not actually crashed. The aircraft sat there, looming over the field as its formidable propellers continued to spin in a cacophony of noise. But as the minutes ticked by, no one exited the airplane. When 20 minutes had passed with no sign of human activity and the plane just squatting there with its engines running like some growling beast, it was decided to go in and investigate. The team went in. They opened the entry hatch located under the fuselage and proceeded to enter, expecting that perhaps the crew had been injured or otherwise unable to get out of the plane. What they had not expect was that the plane would be completely empty. A full sweep through the aircraft showed that not a single crew member was aboard, although it would be later reported that there were signs that the crew had just recently been there, and they must have vacated the aircraft in a hurry. There were found to be chocolate bars unwrapped and half-eaten lying about, a row of neatly folded parachutes, with none apparently missing, and jackets that had been neatly hung up. No crew was found, and how the plane landed on its own is completely unknown. It was later tracked down that the B-17 bomber was supposed to be on a bombing mission in Germany. But what happened to the crew? And how the hell did the thing land all by itself? I mean, autopilot is one thing, but to land on its own? Perhaps there's nothing more mysterious about this case. Maybe, just maybe, the crew jumped to their deaths and the plane slowly lost altitude over many hours and hundreds of miles, only to land exactly accidentally at the anti-aircraft station. But that seems like a huge amount of coincidences to me. So, no one knows what or where these phantom plane crashes come from, or where the planes go. People see them, sometimes hear them, sometimes feel their impact, but we never seem to find them. In the end, we are left with more questions than answers. All I can say is the world is a very strange place. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives Elite.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
Pow.
Cool stories. Speaking of cool stories,
you got one about me.
I'm going to be going to the ocean this week, and so I saw this, and I thought I would bring it up too because I know how much you love the water.
Hold this,
and
better
things that live in the water.
Hard pass.
Just check this out. I was on a ferry for a school softball trip off Kodiak Island, Alaska, in May 2014. I was 18 years old at the time. Many of us had snuck up to the deck around 11 p.m. to watch the waves, smoke cigarettes, and generally be teenagers on a boat without supervision.
Delinquents.
The sun was about to set, but it was still bright outside. So we were just doing our thing, and we noticed a pod of orcas swimming with inside the ferry's wake, which is very cool, but not unusual. If you're familiar with the dimensions of an orca fin, you know they're about 4 to 6 feet in height and look like big black spikes coming out of the water. They travel and hunt in pods of anywhere between 15 and 40 whales. They are apex predators, the beautiful demon murderers of the sea. They're the top of the food chain. So we saw a pod of orcas and counted them to be around 10 to 15 of them, at least that's what we saw, with some babies scattered in between. Very fun to watch. Took them a good 30 minutes to all go by. We tried to get some pictures, but it was just dark enough that our phone cameras weren't very good. Another 30 or 40 minutes goes by, and it's about to get dark when we're cold and sleepy and just about ready to go in. This time, there's no more orcas. We haven't seen one for like an hour and a half. And then one of my JV girls spots another one. So we all turn and look. But one dorsal fin is immediately followed by another and another and another and another, and then two more, and then two more after that in separate rows. And they're taller by a lot and jagged. Like some have whole chunks torn out of them, and they're 8 to 10 feet high. They're all attached to one creature, and we can just barely see it. It's back slicing through the water, covered in these rows of spikes, and it just keeps coming. The thing, whatever it is like 20 or 30 feet from the ferry, running parallel to it, and we are all transfixed. Like there's 9 or 10 of us, and no one is saying a word because we've all turned to look at a whale or whatever this was. We don't know, but it was horrific, terrifying, and it obviously was not a whale. Someone tries to take a picture, but like I said before, it's too dark at this point, and the only reason we can see this thing is the light cast from the ferry portholes. I really wish I had a picture of it. But we all stand there, completely scared, stiff, and in awe, and we keep watching this thing. It just keeps surfacing for a good 6 or 7 minutes, which means whatever it was long. I mean like 60 or 70 foot long, maybe even longer, and covered in enormous spikes. It took what felt like an eternity for any of us to say anything after the last of it disappeared back into the strait. I mean, if you and like eight of your friends had just all seen something that all silenced you, it definitely was something I will never forget. Every once in a while, I'll check in with one of the girls on that team, and I always ask them, do you remember this? Was I hallucinating? And they all said, no, we saw it too. Whatever that thing was, it was terrifying. Thanks. Why?
Dude, I am freaked out. You're just describing it.
A giant sea creature. Maybe, it sounds kind of like Godzilla.
The back of Godzilla.
Right? 60 or 70 feet, maybe longer. Wow. That's why the ocean's scary, right? Is you never know what's in it.
Dude, it freaks me out so bad. That right there. Because this is always my mindset is I'm like, if there's something that's massive out there, let's say that Megalodon is still alive, right? Let's say there's still a population of them out in the water somewhere. Well, wouldn't you think they would have to be something that could keep the Megalodon population in check?
Right.
And then there's something that should have to keep that thing in check. Now, it may not be a physical creature. Maybe it's bacteria or maybe it's water temperature. Maybe it's, I don't know. But when you look at orca, and I think orca are awesome, right? I also think that they shouldn't be in captivity, period. But anyway, they're awesome. They keep, I'm always a fan of them because they kick sharks' butts, right?
Like they eat their livers out.
I'm a big fan.
How do they know where the liver's located?
I don't know. That's another thing. They're just so stinking smart. So it makes me wonder, what keeps them in check?
Monsters.
What if it's whatever this thing was?
Kaiju.
Man, kaiju. That's right. Kaiju. Huh? Listen to this eeriness. A phantom child cries for help.
Okay.
In a South Carolina cypress swamp. Yeah. Here we go. It says, hello. Maybe you can use this story. You have my permission to do so. This was back in the late 90s. When two of my friends and I were staying at their vacation home along one of the local rivers in South Carolina. The house, think 3 small bedrooms, a sitting room kitchen, and a small external bathroom, is on a privately owned island, not theirs, which is used for cattle grazing, and it's about 3 to 4 square miles in area. It's accessible only by one dirt road, which takes about 30 minutes to travel down as it bends and winds through dense cypress swamps, which are full of alligators, and marsh plains. Along the road, there is one other house just as you get onto the island, which has a long has long been abandoned. Now, this old two-story plantation-style home was supposedly abandoned when the owners, a married couple, their child suffered a fatal accident, and they couldn't stand being there anymore. Aside from my friend's house, the cattle farmer's home, and one other vacation home, the abandoned property is the only other structure. Well, my friends and I were out on the dock doing some night fishing, trying to land a shark or something just to throw on the grill, and we hadn't had much luck. Now, the river was smooth as glass, which was really unusual, because where there is a dock, this current is, and it's usually very strong, even during the tide shift. So we sat and chatted, waiting for a bite, up until about 11 p.m. Then off to our right, which is towards the coast, we heard a loud tone or wail. And it sounded something like a mix between a ship's horn and maybe a wolf howl or something similar. Now, an important note, the island is, by car, nearly an hour from deep water access, and probably more from the actual ocean. So the likelihood of that sound being like a large ship is very low. So anyway, we were startled by the sound. Even my friend, who had been spending his summers there since he was in diapers, had never heard this noise before and was bothered by it. So we decided to pack it in since we weren't catching anything anyway, and had nearly gotten all of our equipment back to the house when my second friend heard it. Coming from down the road back towards the island access was what sounded either like a cat meowing or a child crying. Now, we all stood in silence listening and trying to figure out what it was and where it was coming from. After listening for about 5 minutes, we decided to hop in the truck and drive down the road with the windows down so we could try to find what was making this sound. What started out sounding like a cat was made clear as we got further up the road. That was not the case. We could clearly hear a child, and it sounded like it was saying, "Help me." We drove very slowly, calling out, and we'd wait a few minutes and hear, "Help me," again, but always further up the road, towards the swamps and the old abandoned house. We were seriously freaked out because if there was a kid out there, why would they be going away from our calls and our light and deeper into the swamp? We literally made it all the way to the abandoned house when the sound just stopped. We waited for nearly an hour and never heard it again. Now we marked it up as nerves and headed back to the river house, assuming it had been an animal after all, and that we were probably just imagining it saying words. After we had gotten back inside and settled in for the night, we started hearing it again. But as time passed, it came closer to us. We went out and called out, and the sound would come closer, and this went on for hours. Well, we decided we'd try one more time to see if there was a kid lost or something. Again, important note, we are miles from the nearest people. And the noise sounded like a child. Think 4-year-old. But once we got out and into the truck again, the noise stopped. It was now nearly 3 a.m, and we'd been out driving out in the sun, fishing and swimming all day, so we were all extremely tired. And after driving around a bit and calling out again with no luck, we decided to give up. We get back inside, get into our beds, and then we heard it clear as a bell, "Help me!" right outside the house. And it sounded so strange. It was like an echo, if that makes sense. Like it was close, but far away, too. None of us were brave enough to go commando and leave the house, but we went out onto the porch, which was screened in for bugs, and we listened. And as soon as we went out, it would stop. We'd go back into the beds, and it would call out again, but in a different location outside the house. And it circled the house, calling all night. We all slept in the living room, but to be honest, there wasn't a lot of sleeping happening. In the morning, we went out and looked for tracks around the house, as the foundation is basically sand. There wasn't a mark, no prints, animal or otherwise. And to the best of my knowledge, this has never happened again to my friend or any other visitors. To this day, we don't know what we heard, but it's probably the most supernatural occurrence I've ever experienced. H.
Wow. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of that hunter Remember when he was watching that thing through his thermoscope and it was making the voice of a woman, but it clearly wasn't a woman?
Yeah.
Sounds like that, like it's luring or trying to lure them into the swamp.
Yeah.
So and something bad can happen.
And they jump in the truck, start driving, and it won't call out.
Right.
Or it's moving and moving. It's like they only react when they're outside where they could physically get in there near it.
Man, that is creepy. If you have any creepy stories you'd like to share with me and Cam and the other listeners, do not hesitate. You can email us at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. Sorry, can't talk. Also, if you want to support the show, you can sign up for Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/expandedperspectivesElite. You'll get extra episodes over there. And right now, you can still get access to the entire back catalog. Let's not forget about our amazing sponsor, Aura. We value our privacy. We also value yours. Stop data brokers from exposing your personal information. Go to aura.com/expanded. That's aura.com/expanded to get a 14-day free trial and see just how much of your data is being sold. Cam, I'm going out of town. What are you going to be doing?
I'm going to be making my wife and daughter work in the yard.
Awesome. Awesome.
Until they decide take they're not going to do it anymore.
Not only will I share them with me, but I'll put them on Patreon.
I'm going to make
people
them.
Can see that, right?
There's probably not going to be any because they're probably going to laugh at me.
Okay, well.
So, but I will, we're going to be doing that. And like I said, I don't know what I'm going to do with you going with all this free time. I don't know. I'll just have to text you and have you send me pictures of the water.
All right, I'll do it. I hope everybody out there has a good week. Till next time, folks, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home, plus fast and free shipping site-wide. Shop now through July 28th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.